Hello, everybody, and welcome to Politics A, the Canadian politics show hosted by me, Aiden Cleaver. And this is our very first episode. So what I'm going to be doing is I'm just going to talk a little bit about myself, introduce myself. I'm going to talk about this show, just let you know what it's about. And then we're just going to dive straight into the first topic, which is going to be about a possible Ontario election. So first off, who am I? Like I said, my name is Aiden Cleaver. I'm a major in political science, so I am very interested in political science. I have started this show as an excuse for me to be more engaged in politics and learn more about the politics of specifically Canada. And then I've created this show because I think that if you try to find information about politics, especially with like just mainstream news, it largely is not focused about the youth, people in like my age demographic, the university like aged people. And so I want to try to make it relevant to you and explain why you should care about politics, because whether you want to or not, politics is going to care about you. So my goal with this is to inform you, bring in a lot of information. I'm going to obviously have my own opinions. I'm going to be biased. I just want to be upfront and say that it's going to be like, it's almost impossible for someone to not be biased. And especially myself, I want this because I want to talk about my political ideas and my political thoughts. And that's kind of the point of this. But I'm always going to have information or a source or some reason to back up what I've said. I'm never just going to randomly spout something without having at least something to back up why I have this idea or why I've said that. Alrighty, so let's jump into our very first topic, which is the potential of an Ontario election. So there's been a lot of talk, especially in the summer. There was a lot of talk about a possible Doug Ford calling an early election, because the current election for the province of Ontario isn't for a while. It's currently set for June 4th of 2026. So that's quite a ways out. But there was a bunch of talk about it in the summer, and then as we got closer to the fall, now it's being talked more about the Ford government may call an election in spring. So why would he call an election now? Like that's kind of the whole thing we have to first think about. Like, what is the point for him to call an election? Well, the reason he may want to call an election now, or like an early election, is because of the federal election. The federal election is currently slated for, I believe it is like fall 2025, but we are getting a lot of talk about an early election at the federal level. Pierre Poilievre really wants to call an early election, which, I mean, if you're in his shoes, it makes complete sense why you want an early election. He has everything to gain and almost nothing to lose, and the Liberals, the Liberals, NDP, Bloc Québécois have everything to lose. So they've kind of been avoiding an early election because it doesn't really seem to make sense for them to want to get that early election because they don't really have a lot to gain from it. The Conservatives are the one who are going to be gaining at the federal level. But now how does that affect the provincial level? Well, if according to a TVO video, it looks at like what would happen if there was a federal conservative government. And they talk about how Pierre Poilievre and his conservative government will most likely introduce budget cuts, which will then be felt on the provincial level. And then Doug Ford will get blamed for that. The anger towards these federal cuts that will affect the province of Ontario will be directed towards Doug Ford, and that could reduce his chances of re-election. So his thought process is that if he calls an election sooner rather than later, people won't blame what the federal government has done, that they won't blame him for that. And if he calls an election sooner, with the hatred towards the liberals at a federal level. People, he's hoping, Doug Ford, that is hoping that people will conflate the liberals and even the NDP at a provincial level with the liberals and the NDP at a federal level, and will look at it and go, man, I really don't like the, I really don't like Justin Trudeau and his liberals. I really don't like Jagmeet Singh and his NDP. You know what? I'm going to vote for conservative, for Poilievre. I might as well also vote, re-elect Doug Ford. So that is kind of why he might be thinking of calling an early election. But what I want to get into is why I do not want Doug Ford to be re-elected. One of his most recent things that he's done is this, in my opinion, ridiculous idea of a $200 check. So what is this check? Well, it's a $200 tax-free given to every Ontario citizen, which is going to end up costing the province $3.2 billion. That's with a B, billion. And we're not expected to get this check until January, February. So that lines up with the prediction of a spring election. You're going to be getting a $200 check in the mail. You're going to be looking at it, be like, oh, I'll take a free $200. Oh, and then an election starts, and well, Doug Ford gave me $200, so I might as well vote for Doug Ford. It's been talked a lot about how he's basically just buying your vote. He's trying to purchase, he's trying to give you the money and purchase your vote for you to look at that $200 and go, hey, he's a great guy. He gave me $200. I feel like I should just vote for him because, you know, he put $200 in my pocket. My problem with this is that it's every Ontario citizen. So does it matter if you're a massive CEO, like the Rogers family, for example? Like, what, they're going to get $200? Doug Ford's cabinet ministers are going to get a $200 check in the mail? How does that make any sense? It's not like they've looked at this and gone, hey, low and middle class Ontarians are really struggling. We're going to like do, I don't know, some form of like program that you apply to or something. It's clearly not. Doug Ford pushes a whole, we're for the Ontarians. This clearly isn't for Ontarians. It's clearly just blanket, give everyone $200 because we want them to vote for us. And from a Toronto Star article, they have a quote from Doug Ford, which says, quote, put money into people's pockets and they'll go out and do something as simple as going out for dinner. Maybe buying your kids sneakers or clothes, or maybe putting a little renovation on your house. He also said, quote, and they might do that because they have money in their pockets. Now, I want to emphasize this. The same with businesses. If you put money into businesses, they'll invest into their people, into technology, into their infrastructure, and they grow. That's what creates economic strength. Now, I really want to focus on the same with businesses. To me, that sounds a lot like Reaganomics or trickle-down economics, which has been proven to not work. Giving these large businesses tax cuts and CEOs making more money doesn't work. In a CBC article, it says, quote, per capita gross domestic product and unemployment rates were nearly identical after 5 years in countries that slashed taxes on the rich and in those that didn't, the study found. Like, so it just doesn't work. Giving money to businesses doesn't work. And this is clearly what he's hoping for, is that you'll take your $200, you'll go buy something. You'll go buy something from the grocery store, even though grocery store prices have hiked. You'll go buy gas, even though gas prices are really high. He's hoping that that'll boost the economy. But I don't know. I really feel like $200 is not that much money anymore. Like, I don't know. That doesn't seem like it gets you that much anymore. The CBC article also continued to say, quote, the analysis discovered one major change. The incomes of the rich grew much faster in countries where tax rates were lowered. Instead of trickling down to the middle class, tax rates for the rich may not accomplish much more than help the rich keep more of their riches and exacerbate income inequality, the research indicates. Like, so this, some CEO is going to get a $200 check in the mail because they're an Ontario citizen. Then they're also going to hope that people go and buy products from their businesses. This isn't helping Ontarians. We should have invested that money into literally anything else. Invested in education, invested in healthcare, invested in paying down the debt. Ontario, as a province, has a lot of debt. It's around $400 billion. I believe that is in 2021. So we obviously have a lot of debt. So 6.5% of our total expenses, or about like $3 billion, is being paid on, from what I gather from this chart, is being paid on the interest on our debt. So not actually paying off the debt, but just simply paying off the interest on the debt that we have accumulated. Well, maybe some of that money could have gone, literally anything else. This is my problem with Doug Ford. And I think it goes more than just Doug Ford. It goes to the new rise of like populism and conservatism. But with him specifically, talks about he's for Ontarians, trying to get put money in your pocket, trying to reduce prices for you, blah, blah, blah. But he never actually does that. And it makes sense that he wants to give more money to businesses because Doug Ford believes that it's going to solve everything. Such as when, according to rabble.ca, quote, the government says it will pay the cost an estimated $600 million of preparing the land for the spa and creating an enormous underground parking garage to service the spa. Now, that is into relation to the Ontario Place selling he did, which was for a 95 or 99 year lease. I don't know. I could be incorrect, but it was one of them. And this is a trend with conservatives, is that they sign these leases to sell some government land for 90 plus years because it will eventually, yes, go back to the government, but it's for such a long time that it doesn't really matter. Like, that is so far in the future that it doesn't really matter. It's the point being that, especially with this, the Ford government sold Ontario Place for this luxury spa to get to be built there, and now the Ford government is spending $600 million to prepare the land for the spa and also create an enormous underground parking garage for said spa. Why are taxpayers' dollars going towards a private business? That is absolutely insane. A spa, a luxury spa that nobody asked for. I doubt Doug Ford was getting thousands and tens of thousands of letters and emails and calls saying, Mr. Premier, we really need a luxury spa. We really need it. Sell Ontario Place. Spend as much taxpayer dollars as possible. We really need it. No. What happened is they are close in relationship with Doug Ford and get whatever they want. Speaking of people being in close connection with Doug Ford, I mean, we can't talk about that without bringing up the Greenbelt. A Toronto Star article says, quote, Doug Ford's progressive conservatives favored certain developers. Isn't that surprising? Not at all. In a controversial 8.28 billion dollar Greenbelt land swap rammed through in a fashion the premier admits was wrong, the auditor general found in a searing 93-page report to the legislature Wednesday. Bonnie Lisk concluded Ford's opening up of 7,400 acres of environmentally protected land last fall, quote, cannot be described as a standard of defense processes. So once again, Doug Ford is not for the people. He favored certain developers. He is only in it for the people who have paid for his campaign and the people who are connected to Doug Ford. This is the only people he actually cares about. There's another Toronto Star article says, quote, she found developers with ties to Ford's Tories were favored in the process led by then Housing Minister Stephen Clark's chief of staff, Ryan Amanto, and said land they owned that was selected to be opened for housing construction could have soared in value to $8.28 billion as a result. So, I'm sorry, how does that help Ontario citizens that some random landowners that are connected to Doug Ford their land is going to soar in value and make them extremely wealthy. How does that help me? How does that help you? It doesn't. It's just gonna help them. It's gonna enrich them, while destroying environmentally protected land. And like that's also another thing. It's not like he was just taking some random land. This is the Greenbelt. This is environmentally protected land. And as we continue to see the climate get worse and worse, I think it's extremely important to not destroy environmentally protected land. Like, it's just ridiculous. Now, moving away from land and property, you know, Doug Ford, I don't know what it is about him, but he's just had an obsession over alcohol, started with his whole buck a beer idea, and then has now gone with this whole thing of putting with the beer store and putting alcohol in gas stations. So a quick refresher on the Buck of Beer. It caused, according to a CBC article, it caused beer prices to rise because it got rid of certain restrictions. And wouldn't you know it, when businesses can charge less or charge more, they will always choose to charge more because businesses are greedy. A quote from that article says, quote, "When they tried bringing in Buck of Beer, there was a concept attached to the beer market in Ontario, a minimum price floor, and the minimum price floor had an annual escalator. It was basically a formula that kept up with the consumer price index, and it made sure that the minimum price of beer would increase year over year by a small percentage. Turns out that in order to make Buck of Beer feasible, you had to remove that escalator, which means that breweries are now able to charge whatever they'd like to. And when the large brewers are given the option between making more money and charging less, they always choose making more money." Obviously, these businesses are greedy. Like, we that's the reason why we need to tax them and not give them all this free rein, because they don't actually use it for anything good. They use it to put more money in their pockets and to grow their stock price and whatever. And even at the stock price, all the money, it's especially in recent, the money isn't even going to investors. It's all going to executives, which is a whole nother topic, but it's just ridiculous to me. Once again, Doug Ford trying to hide him giving preferential treatment to his elite buddies, trying to hide it as something he's doing for Ontarians. "Well, I'm going to give you a buck of beer so you can go to the beer store and buy crappy beer for a dollar," which never happened. And then that leads into his beer store fiasco, which is like, just, I'm lost for words about it. The contract that the Ford government broke with the beer store was set to expire in 2025. So they could have just waited a year, but instead they spent $225 million of taxpayer money. Like, what? But in a CBC article, it says there's evidence the full price tag actually adds up to hundreds of millions more. It's absolutely ridiculous. In that same article, it has some effects that this is going to have, saying, quote, "Giving private sector retailers, including grocery and convenience stores, a wholesale discount of 10% of the LCBO's basic retail price." So grocery stores and convenience stores are getting a discounted price of 10%. Giving more than 8,000 grocery and convenience stores the right to sell beer, wine, cider, and ready-to-drink beverages at prices lower than the LCBO's prices. So the LCBO, which is government-run, these private grocery stores and convenience stores are able to sell lower than they are allowed. And then continuing, official figures from the Ministry of Finance and the LCBO attained by CBC News, shows the province is facing a net revenue loss because of this, a net revenue loss of $150 to $200 million per year as a result of the changes, in addition to the beer store payments. So again, like, I don't know how many times I have to say it. Once again, Doug Ford does not care about Ontarians. We are losing money. The province is losing money. That $150 to $200 million per year could go to anything. That is revenue. That is being able. That is That is revenue that is usable by the province. And because of this decision, the province is now losing that revenue. Like, just ridiculous. And then in a CTV article, it says, it's a quote from Doug Ford saying, quote, Bonnie Crombie has made it abundantly clear that she wants to add tens of millions of dollars of costs on the backs of people because they're going to pay for it, Ford said. She doesn't believe in putting beer and wine in corner stores, and she wants to add to the cost of a bottle of beer, a bottle of wine, some coolers. But also in that article, it explains how the expansion of availability has been criticized by health and addiction experts who say increased availability is correlated with increased consumption and health risks. Like, yes, that makes complete sense. If before it was you had to go a little bit out of your way and you had to go to the LCBO or the beer store, which I think is fine. I really don't see how that is that big of a problem. And then it was like, okay, well, now we've got some wine and some beer in grocery stores, which I honestly don't think that it being in grocery stores is that too big of a problem either. I think limited amounts of it is fine. But again, a grocery store, and I'm going to get to my reason as to why I think it's bad for gas stations, but like a grocery store is this really large, it's a large building usually. You have a lot of employees there, and you don't have grocery stores right next to high schools. Or like you don't really usually see a lot of like young people going in by themselves. Now on the gas stations, everybody and anybody goes into them really. They also are right next to high schools. And I know that because my high school was right next to a gas station. So now that gas station, which only usually has like two, maybe three, maybe four employees, is now gonna be having alcohol there, and shoplifting is already a really big thing in gas stations. You're now going to have people shoplifting alcohol. You're now going to have underage people shoplifting alcohol, and it just makes it so much easier for them. Or you're going to have some kid sitting out of the gas station asking someone to go buy them alcohol. And like, this is the problem. Why do we need it in gas stations? That doesn't make any sense. You're now putting underage people at risk for shoplifting or trying to get someone to buy them alcohol or whatever. And then it's also, you have to drive to the gas station. So you're going to drive, you can buy single cans of beer. You're going to go in. He also made it that 7-Elevens, you're allowed to drink alcohol out of 7-Eleven. So I'm going to drive over to to the 7-Eleven. I'm going to go in, buy a can of beer. I'm going to go out, drink the can of beer, and then get in my car and drive away. Wow, that sounds like a fantastic plan. Just phenomenal planning. And they are being investigated by the Ontario's Financial Accountability Office. The FAO said that they're going to be looking into this decision. So Doug Ford is already being investigated by the RCMP, and now is being investigated by Ontario's Financial Accountability Office. Like, if that doesn't scream corrupt to you, I don't know what does. It's ridiculous. But as we're talking about the health of people, let's move on to Ontario's healthcare, which, you know, is something that Doug Ford has done a really great job at. So I think everybody, no matter what ideology or political party you identify with, I think we can all agree that Ontario has a healthcare problem, and it's something serious. But Doug Ford is not the right person to deal with this problem. And one of those problems is how much healthcare providers are paid. But Doug Ford tried to pass a bill called Bill 124. And from an ONA article about Bill 124, I'm just going to quote it and explain like what it is. So in 2019, the Ford government introduced and passed Bill 124. They passed it because the Conservatives have a majority in Ontario. It was wage suppression legislation negatively impacting registered nurses, nurse practitioners, healthcare professionals, and other public sector workers. Now, that other public sector workers isn't just healthcare. It also affects teachers, education workers, university and college employees, long-term care staff, child's aid society staff, and so many more. And it limits the wage increases to a maximum of 1% total compensation for each of the 3 years. That is absolutely ridiculous. Over 1 million people affected by this. How are you for the people when over a million people, their wages are going to be maximized to 1% over the course of 3 years? So in 3 years, their wages are going up 3%. That does not go with inflation. Like, that is insane. And it's public service workers as well. So the people that the government employs, the people that I feel like arguably the government should care the most about because you're employing them, you're limiting their wages to 1% over 3 years. Like, it's insane. I don't know. I just the audacity of the Ford government to continue, and it's not just Ford, it's the Ford government as a whole, to continue these ideas that they are for the people and they are working for Ontarians and making life better for you. How are you doing that when you're limiting and putting more money in your pocket? How are you putting more money in people's pockets when you're setting a maximum on how much they can make of 1%? Like, that is absolutely ridiculous. And then moving on to education. He's done great in education, right? Wrong. He has done several cuts to education. Like the Ontario Autism Program, in an article by The Medium, it says the OAP will not be receiving aid in the near future. The current budget of $667 million only provides enough aid for roughly 30% of the 60,000 total children seeking assistance through therapy programs. Each consecutive year, the program sees 7,000 youth added to the waitlist, quickly exceeding the rate that children age out of eligibility for the program. That is insane. The people who need help the most, people with autism, like, they need special help, they need special education, they need these services to allow them to grow and develop, and hopefully just try to make life as best for them as they can. And you're now harming them solely because they have autism, which is something they didn't choose. You're removing aid for them. Like, why? That's just so mean. Like, these children who didn't choose to be autistic are now getting less aid and are not able to get the help they so dearly need. And then it obviously goes beyond just children with autism. There was $100 million cut in the budget for school repairs. There was revoking free tuition for low-income students. And then in an OSSTF, which is a teachers union article, they say, quote, "The Ford government continues to make misleading claims about supposed historic amounts of funding in public education. However, when accounting for inflation and increases in enrollment, over $2 billion, again, billion, is missing from core education funding for the 2024-2025 school year when compared to the 2017 and 2018 school year. Funding per pupil has failed to keep up with inflation, as the Ford government has cut effective funding per student by almost 10% since 2018. So Doug Ford doesn't care about you when it comes to the economy. He doesn't care about you when it comes to healthcare. He doesn't care about you when it comes to education. The only people he cares about are the people in his inner circle. That's the only people he really cares about. And you know what? I'll give it to Doug Ford. I guess they are Ontarians. So I guess he does care about some Ontarians, you know? Okay. So I've talked a lot about Doug Ford. I've given you my reasons as to why I think he's just not fit to be premier. Now, let's look at all of the other parties. And I'm going to give you a bit of a rundown of the recent history of the party. I'm going to obviously tell you the parties that they're the current party leader. And then I'm going to touch on some points from their party platform. I've mostly focused on education, healthcare, housing, and economy or economic plans. Because let's be real, I don't think like university age student it really cares about senior housing. I mean, I'm not going into senior housing anytime soon. I'm only 18, so I've got quite a few decades ahead of me before that affects and applies to me. And I assume it's for the majority of you as well. So like stuff like that, like I'm not going to focus on that. And then these party platforms are from 2022 when the last election was, and they aren't allowed to campaign. So they can't make a new like party platform going through like everything they're committing to, everything they want to do, all that stuff. They can't like make one until there is a new election announced. So we have to take everything from 2022. There's also a lot of stuff about COVID on there and like rebuilding after COVID. And it's 2024 now, almost 2025. We're like a bit away from COVID, you know? I don't think we really, I was just like, I don't think the like focusing on like rebuilding and helping businesses after COVID was like a huge priority. So that being said, take everything with a bit of a grain of salt. Obviously their positions might have changed, but it's only from 2 years ago. So this is the best we have, and I want to keep you informed and not just kind of speculate and guess what the Liberals or NDP or Green are going to do. And those are the three parties I'm going to be focusing on. I'm not going to talk about like any independents or anything like that. So first off, let's start with Liberals, who you think might be the biggest. They actually aren't. They're in a bit of a weird position in Ontario, since they only have 9 seats. And a short history lesson, just grab this from Wikipedia, says that in the 2018 general election, the Liberals were swept from power in a historic defeat that resulted in large gains for both Progressive Conservatives and NDP. The Liberal popular vote fell to 19%, almost half their previous result. The party lost 51 seats and were reduced to a rump of only 7 seats in a swing that elected PC majority and made the NDP the official opposition. So it's not like the federal where, you know, Liberal and Conservative are the biggest. By seats, it's NDP and Conservative and NDP. The NDP is currently the official opposition. And then after that, there was Joe Fraser was appointed as interim leader in March 2020. The party elected former cabinet minister Stephen Del Duca as leader. And then in the 2020 general election, they finished second in popular vote, but gained only 1 seat, falling short once again of official status by 4 seats. After failing to win his own riding, leader Stephen Del Duca announces resignation as party leader. John Fraser returned as interim leader. And then in 2023, in December, there was a leadership election once again, which elected Mississauga Mayor Bonnie Crombie as a new Liberal leader. So that's currently who the Liberal party leader is Bonnie Crombie. We're going to be looking at Stephen Del Duca's 2022 position. That's just all we have to go off of. So that's what I have to use. But I again do think that it's going to give us an idea of the Liberals. So one of the points of the Liberals is housing, and they want to bring rent control. So from their platform, they say, quote, bringing back rent control to all rental homes across Ontario and providing much needed stability to renters who can prepare for smaller, more predictable rent increases. Now, I am a little skeptical about rent control. And I did some research about it. And in a CBC article, it says, While regulation can prevent landlords from taking advantage of market conditions, rent control typically only benefits existing tenants. It can lead to higher rents for new tenants. Oftentimes, those rents go up when the existing tenants leave. So it tends to advantage one group over another. So like rent control would be the existing tenant, their rent isn't allowed to increase by like certain percentage. But then once that tenant leaves and the apartment is vacant, the landlord can raise it however much they want. So with what the liberals have just stated here, I think that it's not the greatest position. And NDP also talks about rent control, so we'll get to that later. And I think so we'll get to that later. And I think the NDP does a bit better job with their idea on rent control. But like the biggest thing is that there is a lot of people that need a home and not enough homes. So like the larger thing we should be doing about housing is just building more of those homes. It is building more of those homes, not giving it to inside developers, but just actually putting like shovels and dirt and building the homes. Like that's what we really need. And just like getting it done faster. That's what we really need. It's about 1.2 million new homes need to be built in Ontario over the next 10 years. Which is a lot, but it's what Ontario needs, for like our housing to get kind of under control. So that's their position on housing. Let's go on to healthcare now. So they say they want to hire more doctors, which is obviously good. They say, quote, we'll train and hire 100,000 new healthcare professionals to meet demand over the next 6 years, prioritizing full-time roles across the health system, including a target of 70% jobs in long-term care homes being full-time, will help reach this goal by getting more internationally trained nurses, physicians, and other health professionals working in Ontario and replacing unnecessary requirements for Canadian experience, focusing instead on competency-based assessments and bridge training. So I think that's very good to focus on. You know, they talk about internationally trained nurses, physicians, other healthcare professionals. And in Canada, it's a bit of a struggle for a healthcare, like, let's just go with a doctor. A doctor who is immigrated from a different country, it's difficult for them to practice healthcare, to continue their profession and being a doctor in Canada, because our healthcare systems are different. And we don't really do a lot other than like kind of making them go back to school. So having some better streamlined way of like bringing them in, being like, okay, you're a doctor. This is how Canada is different. This is what you need to do. This is what you need to do differently. I think that's a really good idea. And I think that's something fine to focus on. I know Doug Ford just announced he wants to make tuition free for Ontarians who want to go into healthcare, and he's going to make them sign a deal that they have to practice healthcare in Ontario for at least 5 years. I think that's good. But I think this is also really good as well. I mean, you don't have to then wait the so long that it takes to become a doctor, which I think having extensive education for doctors is a good thing, obviously, but you have to get an undergraduate, then you go to med school, then you have to do residency, then you blah, 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 blah. If we're able to use the insane amount of immigration, and I don't say insane is a bad thing, but like, I believe it was last year, it was a million people immigrated to Canada. So if we just take some of those people who surely are doctors and help them be trained to practice medicine in Canada, then that's going to quickly help and start to solve the problem. And then, yeah, we continue to push for Ontario citizens to become doctors. So with that, let's go to their economic platform. I just kind of wanted to bring up, they want to do a 4-day long weekend. I think it's a It's interesting. I don't know. I know exactly what they mean about it. Is it they want to do a 40 long weekend for government employees only? Which, if that's it, I don't think that would go over very well. It's already a bit of a stereotype that government employees don't do very much and don't work a lot. And then now saying, oh, they're going to get a 40 long weekend. I don't think it's going to go over for the rest of the population working in like the private sector. But if it's they want to somehow mandate it across like the private sector that you get a 4-day long week, I don't really know how they do that, because that like affects businesses and how businesses work. And just, I think it's an interesting idea. But I don't really know how they would do it. So apart from that, I want to focus on their like more quote unquote normal economic platform. And they actually had a lot to do with small businesses. So I'm going to read out, I think it's about like 6 points that I grabbed from them, about stuff they want to do for small businesses. So going into it, they want to loan an additional $300 million to tens of thousands of small businesses, eliminate incorporation fees for new business startups, reduce regulatory burdens on small businesses, fund programs that help small and medium-sized businesses go digital, and support newcomers who want to become business owners. So rather than Doug Ford, who focuses on these giant businesses, focusing on small businesses, I think that's really good. Giving $300 million, I think that's good. As long as like, obviously the we're making sure that's actually going to a good business and it's not just to some person like trying to scam the system. I think that's good. Eliminating incorporation fees for new business startups. Yeah, that like just removing the barrier, making it easier for someone to be an entrepreneur and start up their own business, I think is always a good thing. Like I said, once again, as long as it's not being abused and we have proper, like a proper structure around it, I think that's good. And then on their education stance, they want to cap class sizes in all grades at 20 students. They want to end mandatory online learning and cover tuition costs for those who need it. I think the capping class sizes, I think that's a good thing. We hear that a lot from teachers and just people who work in the education like sector, that having these massive class sizes is really not good. It's not good for the teachers. It's not good for the students. It's not good for anyone. Because having that many students, the teacher can't properly give them the help or attention or whatever that they need. So I think capping it at 20 is also like a good flat number. I assume they have some reason around it being 20 students. Like, why not 25? Why not 15? I think 15 is probably too low. But I would be interested in if there's a reason it's 25. If like they have interviewed teachers or students or whatever and realize and come to the conclusion that like 20 is like a good round number. It's the best number for whatever. Like, I'd be interested in that. The mandatory online learning, I absolutely hate online learning. I know this is just my personal opinion, but I think it's horrible. And it's also, you know, it's like, I don't know, for me, I just don't learn as well online. I really like having discussion and talking to other people and thinking out loud and stuff like that. And you can't really get that with online learning. I went through high school. I started high school in COVID, like grade 9 was at lockdown. I had to do everything online. That to me was miserable. And it wasn't even just around like COVID, and it was just absolutely miserable to go online, to go into your Google Classroom or to go into your like Google Meet. Everybody has their camera off. Everybody is muted. The teacher has their camera on and their mic on, and they just sit there and talk a little bit. And then it's like, all right, now it's asynchronous and just go do your work. Obviously hated that. You know, there's a big push from teachers of like, yeah, turn your camera on and like mic on and talk. But It's a much weirder environment. I like talking, and I did not enjoy it. I did not ever want to talk. I didn't want to turn my camera on. It's just, at least for me, it's a different mindset and a different environment being online. And then also, out of COVID, Doug Ford made it mandatory that you have to have 2 online credits. Now, he did have it. He did have like a little clause in there that, well, you can sign on and opt out of this. You don't actually have to do it. I don't know if that's changed. I don't know if it is like fully mandatory now. But I know at least when that happened for me, like when I got that letter, I opt out of it. But it was also interesting to me that it was, you have to have 2 online learning credits. Well, I spent an entire year online because of COVID. I then spent half a year going online and in person. And then I had 2 years of in person. How many credits did I get? I got 1 online credit. Like, so he expected me to go from doing everything online, and then I get this, and it only counts for 1 online credit. I thought that was very funny. I looked at it and I just laughed, because I'm like, I did so much online learning and I'm only being recognized for 1 credit, and I opted out anyways. I just absolutely did not want to do it. And then covering tuition costs, I think that like post-secondary education is great. But I know a lot of people aren't able to go. So like giving more money to OSAP to help. I think that's great. I think everybody has like the right to learning. I don't see education as a bad thing. I know it's not for everybody, but I think for the people who don't want to do it, they shouldn't not do it because they're restricted by financial situations. All right, so that's all I have for the Liberals. Now let's go to the NDP. So the NDP is a little bit of a similar story. They've had a rise in popularity in Ontario because of the downfall of Liberals, and currently have the second most seats at 28. Andrea Horwath was the leader for a while until she decided to step down, and now the NDP leader is Marit Stiles. So similar to the Liberals, like I said, their party platform is from 2022 and it's Andrea Horwath's platform, but again, that's all we have to go off of. So that's what we will be. So like I said before, the NDPs are similar to the Liberals in that they want rent control, but I think they do it in a bit better of a way. So from their party platform, they say, quote, pay what the last tenant paid. An NDP government will bring back real rent control for all apartments, eliminating the financial incentive for landlords to squeeze out tenants to raise the rent. We will also ensure that you pay what the last tenant paid by scraping vacancy decontrol. So, what I said, but my problem about rent control before was that, oh, it benefits the tenant, but once that apartment is vacant, the rent, the landlord's going to increase it by a bunch. The NDP do have a solution for that. Now, I don't know. I'm obviously not a landlord, and I don't know the ins and outs of rent control. My only problem with rent control is, how does that affect a landlord? Like, I mean, there's a whole meme of like, tip your landlord, and obviously landlords are doing great for themselves. Like, I'm not crying a river for landlords at all, but I mean more in the sense of like, obviously it is business. They have to make money. My only thing with it is like, I do not think rent control should be a permanent solution. The reason rent is so insane is because we don't have enough houses. So I think it's maybe a good thing as like a blocker right now, like get the rent control, and then start focusing on building homes. And then as we get more homes, slowly reduce and pull back this rent control. And then once we have enough homes and the supply and demand meet each other, then just get rid of rent control. You don't need it. Allow the like landlords to decide how much they want to charge. And eventually, if you have enough supply, prices will go back down, because people won't be willing to pay ridiculous amount of prices. And people are only paying it because they have to. And then another part of the NDP, which I really like this, is, quote, crack down on speculation. We'll introduce an annual speculation and vacancy tax on residential property modeled off British Columbia's tax. it will apply to all speculators who own houses they don't live in. The rate will be 2% of the assessed value and will be phased in over 2 years. We'll also maintain the non-residential speculation tax, NRST, at 20% and close loopholes that allow wealthy investors off the hook. I absolutely love this. I really dislike the idea now that housing is an investment, that it always goes up. You always make money off of it. You need to put money into it, blah, blah, blah. I really dislike that because it's now gotten us into the position that we're in. The reason these prices are so insane is because the fact that the interest rates have been so low for so long. It's been like super low, like 0%, 1%, 2%, 3% interest rates. It's been it's been free to borrow money is how I've heard it worded. It's been super easy for people to borrow money and just buy up a bunch of property. And that's why we're now in the position we are. BC is also a little different because a lot of Chinese citizens will, to get their money out of China and out of control of the CCP, they'll just buy Canadian real estate, especially in Vancouver. And the NDP says they want to model it off of BC. So let's take a look at what their tax is. According to BC, it says, quote, the speculation vacancy tax is designed to turn vacant homes into housing for people in British Columbia and ensure foreign ownership and those with primarily foreign income contribute fairly to BC's tax system. In the fifth year, 2022 tax year, of the speculation and vacancy tax, more than $81 million will help fund affordable housing projects where the tax applies. 83% of the revenue comes from foreign owners, untaxed worldwide earners, Canadians living outside BC, and like quote unquote other non-BC residence owners. So it's not hearing that you might be like, oh, well, the NDP want to come in and tax me and take all my money, but it's not for that. It's for people who are buying up a bunch of land and property and then doing nothing with it and sitting on it as an investment. And that's not what it should be. It should be a way for people to live. It should be a house. It should be a place for people to go home and take and go to sleep and raise a family and cook dinner and all that stuff. It shouldn't be some random foreign investment company or some person just coming in and buying up all this property and then sitting on it and hoping that it skyrockets and moons over the next 2 years or whatever. So done with their housing, let's go to their healthcare. They want to, quote, raise hospital funding to exceed healthcare inflation, population growth, expand in operating plans, and unique local needs such as aging populations. I think just generally healthcare, we really need to focus on it because Ontario spends the least on healthcare out of all of the other provinces. From an FAO article, it says healthcare spending includes hospital and outpatient services, medical products and equipment, and public health service, among others. Health spending per capita in Ontario was $4,889 in 2022, the lowest in Canada, and $876, or 15.2% below the average of the other provinces. Since 2008, Ontario's health spending per capita has consistently ranked at or near the lowest in Canada. There's an amazing graph on here. I like graphs. that shows that we are literally in dead last. It goes Ontario, Manitoba, Alberta, PE, Saskatchewan, BC, New Brunswick, Quebec, Nova Scotia, and then Newfoundland. Absolutely ridiculous. Why Ontario is supposed to be like great big province, a bunch of money, and we're spending per capita the least on healthcare. Absolutely insane. And yet we're spending $85 billion on healthcare. That is the majority of what our total expenses is going towards. And where is all that money going? It's not going to hospitals. CBC did an article that exposed the money that the Ford government was giving to private clinics. Doug Ford's whole obsession with private for-profit clinics. In the article, it says, quote, the documents show a provincial agency, Ontario Health, contacted Don Mills, Surgical United LTD. At the following per surgery funding rates in each of these three fiscal years, starting from 2020 to 2021, the government was giving them $1,264 for each procedure class as minor complexity, such as cardiac surgery, $4,037 for each moderate complexity surgery, $5,408 for higher complexity surgeries. And the funding rates do not indicate how much the surgeon bills OHIP for each operation. The physician's billing for a particular OHIP covered surgery is identical whether it takes place in a hospital or private clinic. So Doug Ford is giving a bunch of money. He is funding for-profit healthcare clinics and not giving proper funding to the to our actual hospitals, which I that just doesn't make any sense to me. And this is also private. The NDP had to perform a freedom of speech inquiry into the government about this, and it's just insane to me that this is held private. It then became public, but it was held privately, and then it comes out that the Ford government is spending all of the money. I won't say all the money. Is spending a large amount of money in funding these private for-profit clinics. It all comes back because he harps on this so much that he's for Ontarians and he's trying to put more money back in your pocket, blah, blah, blah. How is he putting more money back in your pocket when it costs you money to go see a doctor? And I don't blame the people who go to for-profit clinics because, yeah, it's difficult to go see your family doctor or getting surgery and stuff like that. It's really difficult. And the problem with that is because Doug Ford isn't properly funding healthcare. But once again, this is about NDP, not Doug Ford. So I'll continue onto their economic plan. The NDP want to raise the minimum wage in Ontario from about $17 an hour to $20 an hour by 2026. They say, quote, raise the minimum wage to $20 in 2026 with stable, predictable $1 an hour increases annually. To help small businesses achieve this, New Democrats will bring in targeted sponsors for those that need help increasing wages as our economy is rebuilt. Again, they say economy is rebuilt because this is around COVID and stuff like that. But I do like the general idea of just increasing the minimum wage as inflation goes up. Obviously, we need to increase the minimum wage that people are being paid. And then, yeah, if you're a small business, they are going to figure out a way to help you meet those goals. So I think it generally is a good idea for that. And then last but not least, let's look at the Green Party. A bit of background on them. They doubled their seats in the last election. It was from one to two seats, but still that's big for them. They have grown. That's always a good thing. And they're a smaller party, so it's not like they're going to have an insane amount of seats or anything, but still they have two seats. That's great. They have the same party leader they did from 2022. So the platform will most likely be very similar, but once again, it is outdated and from 2022. And at the top of theirs, they have a list of, I think, about six. They say top priorities for the Green Party. I'm going to look at the first three because it was about homes, health, and climate economy. So I'm just going to look at those. So first, it's titled Homes, Not Highways. Freeze urban boundaries, build 1.5 million homes, and provide people with more choices such as triplexes, fourplexes, and walk-up apartments. Now, thing about walk-up apartments is, it's in the name. They're apartments only with stairs, so they don't have elevators or anything like that. So I think being mindful and making sure that we're obviously not building too many of them, because that obviously makes it difficult for people who are in a wheelchair or who just have difficulty walking. They're not able to really use those apartments. And also, I think it's just kind of annoying if you're having to move in and you're having to lug a couch upstairs. You know, that really sucks. But continuing on, they want to clamp down on speculation because homes are for people, not speculators. I 100% agree with Mike Schreiner right there. I 100% agree with him. I really dislike the fact that homes have become speculation and not for people. But continuing on, they want to invest $1 billion a year to build 182,000 affordable community rental homes, including 60,000 supportive homes over the next decade. Great. Their second point is mental health is health. Increase mental health spending to 10% of our health budget to include mental health care under OHIP. I think that's great. The fact that mental health care isn't under OHIP is kind of insane to me. The fact that like we're talking so much more about healthcare, it's a really big problem, and yet we're not really doing much for it for people who need it. You know, people who need to go to therapy aren't able to go because of the cost of it. It costs a lot of money, and if you're solely relying on your employer and employee benefits, it's eventually going to run out. So I think putting it under OHIP is great. They want to increase funding for children's mental health to reduce the wait time to less than 30 days. That's great. You know, trying to like solve, I don't want to say solve the problems in their mental health, but like trying to get at it sooner and reducing the wait times to just 30 days, I think is much better. You know, like I think it is somewhat difficult to catch ADHD, in children, obviously, because children are just going to be like bouncing around all over the walls. But if you can try to figure it out and make it easier for them to like get a diagnosis on that or something, I think that's great. And just mental health in general, with anything, not just ADHD, that's what came to mind. And then decriminalize drug use to improve lives, lower costs, and treat mental health as a public health issue. So with decriminalization of drugs, it's a difficult topic, and I think decriminalization of drugs can be a good thing, because obviously we don't want to punish people for an addiction, but I don't know. I think it's a very difficult thing to do, and maybe needs to have a lot of thought into it. And then lastly, new climate economy. So they want to establish a transparent annual carbon budget to reach net zero by 2045. Electrify transportation, buildings, and industry to crush pollution and lower energy costs. I think if that would be great. You know, with one thing, we could like, I think putting solar panels on the roofs of like government buildings, you know, obviously then we're not forcing it onto private citizens, but on the government buildings, solar panels have drastically come down in cost, and just that extra way of generating electricity and energy, I think would be great. And then provide up to $15,000 in incentives for homeowners for energy retrofs to help people save money by saving energy. Again, incentives to help people cross that financial burden and do that. I think that's very good. I think reflecting on everything we've talked about today, you know, I hope that with what I've said, you will go and do any additional research, learn a bit more. You know, Doug Ford talks a lot about Bonnie Crombie, even though Marit Stiles is the official opposition. You know, maybe do some research on the NDP, do some research on the Liberals, do some research on the Green, and I mean, do some research on Doug Ford. You know, obviously don't just believe everything I say. I have a bias. I dislike Doug Ford. But I hope that this was informative for you. Thank you for listening to the very first episode of Politics A. And I can't wait to talk to you guys on the next episode. Thank you very much for listening, and I hope you all have a great rest of your day. Thank you. Bye-bye.